Welcome to the AI Business Podcast, where we feature conversations with interesting guests at the intersection of artificial intelligence and business.
Welcome back to another episode of the AI Business Podcast. I'm Ben Wodecki, and I'm really pleased today to be joined by Megan Schoen from Shutterstock. Megan, how's it going?
Doing great. Happy to be here and chatting with you.
Appreciate you coming along. Thank you so much. So today, Megan, you are the CPO at Shutterstock. Would you mind kind of briefly talking to us a little bit about what you kind of do?
Yeah, I think in a nutshell, my job is to drive our product innovation and growth. What that means in layman's terms is intimately understanding who our customers are, making sure that we're developing things that resonate with them and that ultimately are aligned to our business goals. So really close to our customers at all times.
So you've been CPO for a little over 2 years, kind of end of 21, if I remember rightly. And you kind of rose through pre kind of AI imaging coming through. And if, just reading from your background, you worked on the kind of previous AI powered features. How have you seen the market shift since with the rise of things like DALL-E and that kind of explosion towards the latter half of last year?
Yeah, when I think about what AI means, I think it's just another evolution of how people continue to do work. When I joined at Shutterstock, a lot of my focus was on how we can transform our business from a place that sells things into a creative partner. AI and the things that have come along, and particularly the last 12 months, are very in alignment with how we've been thinking about this transformation. It's all about how we can leverage technology in order to make the art of creating something much simpler, much more enjoyable, and allow creatives to focus on the thing that they want to do, which is actually create. So we've leaned into this really heavily and very intentionally because it represents a new way for people to get their creative work done.
Because you have the AI background, I'm kind of keen to explore about kind of how the reaction has been as well. Because obviously you have that AI experience, but I'm guessing some people around you may not have been. Was it kind of a rush to understand, or was it kind of how did your teams around you react to the last kind of 12 months?
Yeah, I will say that we have a phenomenal data science team internally that we've had, you know, since I've been here and continue to invest in and grow. And so there was a baseline level of understanding, especially within the depths of the organization and the people who are actually working on these things. As far as what it means for our business, there was a lot of conversations with our executive team around how are we going to lean into this in a way that mutually is beneficial for both our contributors and our customers? And I will say that it led to a lot of thoughtful conversations about how we can leverage this technology for good. And that's been our focus from the outset, is how we can take this, put it in the hands of our customers and contributors. And what's fascinating to me, with a lot of times with new technology, there's a steep learning curve. People don't understand what it is. When we surveyed our customers and contributors months ago, right before any of the major announcements that have come in the last 6 months, resoundingly, both our customers and our contributors knew what this was. Over 70% of them understood what AI was, what generative content was, and fundamentally, they had questions about what it meant for them. So unlike any other, you know, technological advancement, I was really surprised and pleased to see that type of response from our audience base. They're educated. They want to know more. They want to know what it means for the work that they do every day.
So I would say, Megan, out of the announcements that you guys have made probably the last 6 to 12 months, your own imaging platform for AI was arguably the biggest. Could you talk to us a little bit about the kind of journey to getting to that point?
Yeah, I think it started with some deep conversations with players in the space. You know, we formed really early partnerships with the likes of OpenAI, LG, which obviously we've talked about publicly, before they had products in market, right? Before DALL-E 2 was even a thing. And so it allowed us to really understand where the product was going, what they were working on, so that we had a runway to understand the best way to commercialize it, right? What this would mean outside of a research box and in the hands of actual creatives. And so when we brought this product to market, there was a couple things that were top of mind for us. One, we wanted to ensure that when we brought this to market, we were giving our customers what they need: high quality content that's easy to get, that can help them tell better stories. Equally as important as our history as a marketplace for the last 20 years, we wanted to make sure that we were thoughtful about our contributor network, which meant we had to figure out how we can help them monetize through this new channel. And so when we brought this to market, we applied those two principles to ensure that we are giving our contributors opportunity to continue to monetize their content, even with generative. And we are continuing to give our customers the thing that they need to tell the next best version of their story.
You mentioned two of the names there, LG and OpenAI, obviously. OpenAI being one, arguably the name right now in AI in terms of partnerships. And just from our coverage alone, you also penned some deals with Meta in terms of kind of research collaboration, things like that. I'm keen to kind of explore the impact that's had on what you've done in terms of creating this, because, you know, in terms of exploring and creating this new idea, because it doesn't just come from anywhere. And obviously, given your prior work, and obviously you have that data research team, it's kind of difficult to enter it. So how key is it for enterprises and businesses to kind of develop partnerships and to work through to create, in essence, what you guys have created?
I think it's absolutely critical. I'm a big fan of partnering to bring diverse knowledge and diverse expertise to the table to co-create something that may not have come into life had that partnership not existed. And you can see that manifest in how we've approached this strategically to date. We're trying to partner with many because we don't know if there's going to be a single winner in this space, right? I think there's going to be multiple winners. And for us, we're trying to marry our knowledge of what creatives, what marketers need in order to do amazing work with a lot of the research and development that these other companies are doing, and marry those two things to actually not just have a product come to market that is a research product, but one that is purchasable, one that resonates with customers, and ultimately one that meets their needs so that it's entirely useful for them. And so that's how we've approached partnership, is just let's get an early seat at the table, let's have really productive conversations, and let's make sure that whatever we're co-creating and sharing in resonates with our customer base.
That's right. And one of the more recent ones that you guys penned was with NVIDIA during a very busy GTC period. It caught my eye because it works on something that is more than just the imaging. It's the 3D imaging and 3D modeling, which, you know, is the next step, is arguably the biggest step, because it's something that's, you know, could be applied to the other buzzword of the previous year, the metaverse. Can you talk to us kind of a little bit about this NVIDIA deal and kind of where it's kind of leading from there?
Yeah, this is really exciting for us because we're very focused on how we can make it easier to do work. I've said that a few times, and it's intentional that I've said that a few times. When you think about 3D assets, they're not easy to create. They have not been democratized in the same way that image files have, right? There's not a universal standard for what 3D is. And as you talk about this buzzword of the metaverse or whatever it becomes, there's going to be a huge need for this type of content. And so this partnership with NVIDIA represents us taking a leap forward in making 3D accessible, shortening the timeframe that it actually requires and the level of skill that it requires to create 3D assets at scale. And so unlike image, right, where I think it's a lot easier to bring that in front of the consumer today who understands how to work with a JPEG, NVIDIA and that deal is really focused in the near term on our contributor side. How do we empower 3D artists to produce 3D models more quickly? As we evolve that technology together, there's also a really interesting opportunity that you can envision, where you can imagine a world where anyone can create 3D. Imagine what that would look like. And so, you know, our entire ethos for the last 20 years has been to put the tools in the hands, the assets in the hands of our customers who need to go and create. 3D is not universally adopted and democratized, and this is a step in that direction.
No, I think that's fair. And obviously, because you were using that vast experience that the team at Shutterstock have used, it means that you have an absolute trove of not only data to use, but expertise that you've built up in terms of research and general approaches. And I'm keen to explore that a little bit deeper, because Shutterstock used that to rush ahead, but as did Adobe, one of your rivals. But then comparatively, Getty were a bit skeptical and they slowed down, although for the record, they did pen some generative AI deals with a couple of names, but they also kind of were a bit more cautious. Their CEO kind of came out swinging. How do you perceive that? What's the kind of take on that approach?
Yeah, I mean, I can't possibly speak on behalf of another business or what their strategy is. I can talk to you about our thinking and what our strategy is. And I think it boils down to the fact that our customers demand innovation. And in order for us to not focus on this and not embrace this, to not help them understand what this means in their creative journey, would have been an abandonment of our customers. On the same note, not helping our contributors understand what this means for their work, how this can actually help them and be an additional revenue stream for them, would have been an abandonment of our contributors. And so for us, there was no other choice because it was so in alignment with what we exist to do, bring innovation to our customers, bring new ways for our contributors to monetize, to market. There wasn't really a deviation there for us. It felt like a very natural step.
And can you would you mind kind of exploring the kind of caveats you've put in place to kind of adhere to that and kind of the ease of concerns? Because obviously there is, and not just from what you guys are doing, but Microsoft, other big names in terms of people rushing ahead, and you know there is some concern from consumer base that may not understand either the technology or actually how their data is being processed. What kind of things have you guys at Shutterstock put in place to kind of ease that consumer concern?
Yeah, so the way that we've set this up is really geared to recognize the collective nature of these outputs. We've established something called the Contributor Fund, where we actually pay a royalty into a fund that compensates all of our contributors whose assets were used to help develop generative content. So you'll notice that we don't actually accept generated content direct from contributors to be uploaded to our site. We only allow for the content to be generated on our site because we understand which pieces of our contributors' content went into feeding those models so that when we either do a strategic deal like some of the ones you've seen us talk about on the street, and/or when content is generated and purchased on our site, we pay back contributors just as we would pay them a royalty on anything they direct sell within our marketplace. What's really interesting about this is that it's an additional revenue stream, right? We're still allowing them, obviously, to direct sale, but we have a whole bunch of contributors who have contributed a lot of content on our site that have never direct sold anything, right? Because maybe their content isn't of the quality that customers are looking for, not of the genre, or maybe it's lost in a sea of content because we have millions of results around a certain topic. And if you think about what the Contributor Fund does in generative technology, it allows them to monetize that content because we're compensating them based on volume of their contribution, not on whether or not they can sell directly to customers. And so that's something that's really important to us is connect supply and demand in our marketplace, give our contributors the opportunity to monetize, and then of course, we've allowed them to opt out. Right. So for anyone who is in the midst of this new world and they don't want to be a part of future data deals, they don't want to have these monetization opportunities, they just have to click a button and let us know, which basically says to us and to anyone we do business with that we will not sell their content in that way. The reality is though, our contributors are not coming to us because they want a gallery to display their work. They're coming to us because they want to sell their content. And that's exactly what we're doing.
Yeah, I must admit I wanted to pick up on the fund because it was something that I hadn't really seen other vendors doing. I was very surprised by it, and I was very kind of intrigued about actually, you know, kind of spurring uptake. Would you say that an approach like this is actually better in terms of encouraging people to kind of get involved and actually want their content to be trained as a kind of golden carrot in a way, or?
We think so. I mean, I think that's why we've doubled down on this is I don't think any marketplace or ecosystem works if you don't connect supply and demand. There's no universe where we would ever leave our contributors out of this equation because none of us have a crystal ball. We don't know if generative content is going to be 10% or 90% of the content that people use 5 years from now. We can't possibly know. But what we can do is ensure that regardless of what the outcome is, we've connected contributors to that demand so that they can continue to grow their business as a result of how this market continues to evolve.
So I think one of the arguably the biggest concern that arose was the copyright issue. Actually, our most read article last year was on that darned AI generated comic book that spawned the way. And I spent a lot of my previous time before AI writing about intellectual property, so it's right up my street. And I was kind of wondering about this before the conversation, because obviously selling AI generated content, but then you, if it's an image, you can't actually register the right as a protected material. That's something that I found really interesting. What copyright related considerations have you guys put in place around this at all?
Yeah, the way that we're approaching this is, again, like I said, not to have this content directly uploaded to our site where we don't know where the origin is. By having this as a tool on our site, we can trace it back to exactly what materials went into feeding these models because of the relationships that we've had. And that is why partnership has been so important here. We're partnering with players who are thoughtful about this, who are thinking about properly licensing content to build models. Maybe they haven't all figured out the payback cycle for contributors, but that's where Shutterstock can uniquely insert themselves as a partner to help make sure that there's that payback cycle and that we're conscientious of what is the rights or the content that is being used, how is that being used to then generate new content, and then how are we acknowledging and compensating contributors as a result of that. And that's really where we are. I think that this story will continue to evolve. We're going to continue to be thoughtful here. There's going to be new things we learn in the next 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, but we're approaching this eyes wide open and making sure that we're staying true to our core beliefs.
No, those partnerships really make sense considering the lack of guidance, the lack of actual tangible things coming out of places like the Copyright Office, intellectual property offices to a wider extent. Do you feel that this kind of issue would be a little bit at ease if some actual guidance were to come out, or is it just far too early to tell at this point, do you feel?
I think it's too early. It's very much the first pitch of the first inning. You see a lot of industries where guidance follows innovation, right? Airbnb is a perfect example. Uber is a perfect example. You know, if you would have asked the hotel industry if there would be an entire vertical where people could stay at each other's homes, and how do you protect yourself? How do you handle that through insurance? That there wasn't guidance there, right? There was innovation. People had to step into that innovation. They had to experiment. They had to learn. And that actually helped evolve and form guidance regulation around that. Same thing with Uber. I feel like we're just very early in this process. And so we're going to try to do this in the right way, gather a lot of data, and participate in the conversation.
No, I think that's fair. I mean, the IP was arguably the glacial industry in terms of moving things. So I don't expect anything for 10 years at least. And that's coming from me. Anyone listening who used to listen to my old products, the Unitary Patent Court still going slow. That's a very niche reference for a very small group. Megan, I'm keen to explore a little bit more about, and we touched on it earlier, around the next phase, right? So that means 3D modeling we talked about, but kind of what's coming next? Because I would, in my opinion, the image content generation has waned in the wake of ChatGPT coming out just 6 months after, maybe even less. What do you feel is coming next? Because obviously that focus is on large language models, but I'm keen to explore what's coming. Is it video, text to video, which obviously aligns with what you guys are doing? Is it more that modeling? What are you kind of seeing right now?
Yeah, I think that all of these things are actually going to start coming together. I think people compartmentalize them in their mind, right? Where it's text is productivity, image is creative. I think there's a world where whether it's image or video or 3D or whatever content type, that those two things start getting married together in ways that enhance human ability to create. And I think that, you know, that's where I'm really looking forward to is it's not just about hype. It's not just about hype around text or hype around image. It's about how these things come together to help people do creative work more productively. I think that's on the horizon.
And what are you most excited about?
How we're going to participate in this, honestly. I mean, I think that the reason I'm so excited about it is because I believe that Shutterstock has the opportunity to be a major player in this space and help define what that new world looks like, right? Where creativity is not linear. And we're thinking a lot about that every single day. You know, how do we continue to provide this technology so that our customers can tell better stories, so they can innovate, so they can create more quickly? And we have teams very dedicated and focused to helping define what that new reality may be.
And what I'm kind of keen to understand is what can we expect from the Shutterstock team over the next 5 to 6 months? Is there anything that we should be peeling our eyes for or keeping an eye out for?
Innovation. Not to, you know, sound cliche, but the thing that we are focused on right now is how do we bring these products to market in a way that they matter, right? Where they're not toys, but they're actually things that people can do or can use to do their creative work. We're challenging how people discover content, right? How people create content. And I think you're going to see our experience continue to evolve as we look at how we transform these things from things that people are interested in to things that people use to do work every single day.
And finally, the last 6 months, the last 12 months have gone by in an absolute flash. Do you think the same is going to happen this year? Can we expect a little bit of a wane and a break to work on some of those innovations? Or is that breakneck speed going to keep going?
I think the breakneck speed is going to keep going. I think we're going to have to run really fast as well. The rest of the world is going to have to do that too. I mean, you see major industries, major verticals understanding that this is coming and having to think about what this means for their business. I may be showing my bias here as a product person, but there's not a better time, right, for innovation to occur as when a lot of large companies are running really fast, trying to internalize what this means for their customers. That's when true innovation and new products come to market. So very excited about that.
Well, in that case, we both started the pod with coffee. So I think we need to actually put another pot on because it sounds like we're going to need it. Megan, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. Really appreciate it.
To get more AI news and insights, visit our website at aibusiness.com. Until next time, thank you for listening.